Welcome to Teaching Restored. We get to talk about how to teach the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. And Julie gets today's episode. She has prepared something incredible for us. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it's great, as always.
Can we downplay instead?
Oh,
of,
wow. Did I set too high of a bar for you, Julie?
My mom has this thing, and I totally agree with her. She's like, allow me to see how great something is instead of telling me how great it is. Like, let me discover it for myself. And my husband's always like, why? Like, this is the most amazing thing ever. You're going to eat this. You're going to take a bite of this, and it's going to be so great. And then she's like, wah, wah, because it doesn't live up to the hype.
Right, right.
So she's like, don't hype it up. So don't hype okay. it up, Kevin.
So how about let's do this.
Start over.
Welcome to Teaching Restored, where we're going to talk about teaching the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. Julie has something for us.
Perfect. That was perfect. I feel great. I am going to exceed everyone's expectations after that introduction.
Okay, great.
That was perfect. I had a hard time keeping a straight face in the silence, but the silence had to be there for impact.
Yes.
Good job, Kevin. Okay, let me preface this by saying that I have a thought. So sometimes these are the best kinds of discussions, and sometimes it's a little bit tough. I am really praying hard today that today's going to be awesome, because I have this thought that's kind of been ruminating in a really meaningful way in my heart. And as I was starting to process through it a little bit, I actually, yesterday morning, my son woke up at 4:30 in the morning. I wanted to die because I had gone to bed at 1 in the morning. And so I'm old. That is a short night. And so to keep my sanity, I put him in the stroller and I strapped on my headphones. No, I put my AirPods in and started walking and was listening to some things. And I had one of those mornings where I felt like I've kind of been wrestling a little bit with the Spirit, kind of struggling because I feel like I'm not studying the scriptures with the same depth that I used to when I was teaching a specific class, and I'm kind of beating myself up over it. And I'm like, my prayers feel kind of weak sauce because I'm, you know, so exhausted and it's so busy, and I was kind of beating myself up. And I went on this walk and I had like kind of this rejuvenating experience where I felt the Spirit in a very invigorating way, both mentally and physically. And I'm like, no, Julie, you're doing your best, kind of a moment. And it was part of what was kind of flooding through my brain in these incredible clarities of thought that only can come from the Spirit has to do with the topic of Zion. And I know, like, there are a lot of words that we use in the church, and we're going to have an episode about this later, that have really deep, meaningful definition that we kind of gloss over because of the fact that we use them with such consistency. Sure. So we're going to have an episode about that later. I've already got it planned.
Okay.
One of those words I think is Zion. And so I want to build us into what I want to talk about today by asking a question first. What to you is the definition of Zion?
A united people with one heart and one mind, one purpose.
Okay. Right. We say one heart, one mind. So can you expand? Like, if you, Kevin Jones, are to think about Zion, first of all, do you often think about it as a place?
So yes and no. I mean, I mean, if I had to put a percentage on it, it'd probably be 50-50. But yeah, it's a place. But then again, it's not a place. It's a state of being at the same time.
Right. It's a state of being. That's a great point. I think about it more as one heart, one mind, like a people, mm-hmm. one heart, one mind. And I don't necessarily think about it as like a physical location. But in the scriptures, like that we've been studying in the Doctrine and Covenants just very recently, they, you know, the Lord is revealing to them that this place, this location
exactly.
is going to be Zion, right?
Right.
And then he's teaching around that, but no, you don't understand. It's so much more than the place, right? And in, as you kind of are studying those chapters, those sections, he's dropping these little truth bombs about what Zion actually is. And so I want you to think about not Zion the place, but I want you to think about Zion the people. What are some of the things that you would out of the gate, like what comes into your mind? What do you picture when you think about Zion?
Oh, people that, I would say people that are different, have different ideas, yet still are going toward the same goal. A group of people who are supporting each other, who through hard times, bad times, even if they may not totally get along, you know, it's not, I mean, it, wow, you know, they're that kind of personality rubs me the wrong way, but you know what? I'm not going to be judgy about this. If they need help, I'm still going to love them. You bet. That's fine. I can put my feelings on the shelf. And working hard toward building up the kingdom of God. So there's my mini take on.
Okay. So let me give you, I'm going to extrapolate a couple things from what you just said. Mm-hmm. Keyword support, right? Sure. And so when you're talking about supporting each other, and I love that you pointed out the lack of sameness, like that it isn't people who think the same, look the same, you know, mm-hmm. act the same, have the same personalities. Like it is a melting pot of personalities and differences in physical appearance as well as in personality. And that the beauty of it comes in part from the unifying work. You also brought up the word working hard. And I think that's physical work as well as mental and emotional work. Like everybody's mm-hmm. working together, but the work that it takes to develop relationships with people who aren't exactly like you. And the work that it takes because, and I think this is the key, you said in different words, but that they're working towards the same goal. And so I think when you think about one heart, one mind, heart has to do with purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Mind has to do with focus. So you're thinking about people who are really unified around a goal and unified around a desire of what they want and willing to work for that together. Okay, so there, go to the Bible dictionary for just a second.
Okay.
And we're going to look up Zion. Oops, I just went to the wrong part of my app. I'm way back in Nephi. I've been studying all over today, so. Okay. Okay, so when you look in the Bible dictionary under Z for Zion, and I brought it up and Todd's like, there's Zion in the Matrix, Julie. But we're not talking about that because we were talking about this last night. Okay,
so look at the for the delineation.
I know. I was like, thanks, Todd. Okay, so there is, where is it? Oh my goodness. Geographical. Hold on. I'm trying to find it. The city of New Jersey. Revelation says we call the Zion. Why is it not there? Maybe it was in the gospel.
It's in Bible dictionary. I found it.
Yeah, but it's not the right one. That's not what I want.
Oh.
Okay, I'm going to the... Yeah, I want maybe it's a guide to the scriptures. Sorry, I'm taking everyone on a journey. Sometimes we make mistakes.
Just what?
Stick with me. Here it is. I found it. It's in the guide to the scriptures.
Okay. I'm there.
Last sentence of that description.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about, and we've heard this over the pulpit and general conference, right? Mm-hmm. So it says the saints are counseled to build up Zion wherever they are living in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want us to think about something, and this comes from the idea that in Adam Miller, you know, in early resurrection, he talks about living as though we've already been resurrected, how so often we think about things in the future as futuristic. Well, I think we think about Zion as something in the future. And we often, you know, think about an eventuality and what that will look like. Like we think about the millennium as being something that will be 1,000 years, but it's in the future. Or, you know what I mean? There are all these things that we think about, resurrection in the future. I think we think about Zion that way a little bit too. And what this is talking about, this building up of Zion, wherever we are, I think is a right now prophecy. Like it is talking about how we have a responsibility right. It's not an eventual prophecy. It's a right now thing. So I want you to think about in your life. I mean, not cliche. Maybe the first thought that would come to your mind is our ward. We're supposed to be building Zion in our wards and in our stakes. You know, that's what you might think of first when you read that last line in mm-hmm. Guide to the Scriptures.
Sure. Yep.
What are some mini Zions though, that we should be
family. Our family would be the first one. And then our relationships with others on a one-on-one individual basis as well. And
wanting
so,
Zion-esque relationships,
say that again.
You mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You want
yeah.
Zion-esque, okay?
Yeah, Zion-esque relationships. Okay. So then my mind goes to build. Okay, so if there's a Zion, then there's something else besides Zion. That it's inherent in the understanding that there is Zion, right?
And
then there's anti-Zion. I don't know what you call it, right? Right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's call it anti-Zion, right?
Anti-Zion.
It's not that it's I'll just say this. I think that part of Zion is trying to bring those in anti-Zion into it and extending the boundaries, enlarging the stakes of Zion to them as well, to those who are not of one heart, one mind, one purpose as well.
Okay, so make that relational. So what you're talking about isn't just convert baptisms, enlarging the stakes of Zion, bringing mm-hmm. people in, right?
Right.
Make that, if you're talking about these mini Zions, like our family and our relationships, what does that look like? This taking people from anti-Zion into Zion. Describe what that means.
So neighbors, okay. friends, community, all of those associations that we have of the people who are not of the same heart and same purpose that we might be and sharing that with them.
Okay, I love that. So I'll give you an example of something that is part of my calling I'm doing right now. I'm meeting with faith leaders to talk about building Zion. Basically, it's really how can we create an opportunity for interfaith dialogue among the various congregations in our geographical area? You know, what can we be unified on? So they're not people that are going to be baptized. This is not a proselyting effort, but it is creating Zion-esque relationships amongst various congregations in mm-hmm. our area. Mm-hmm. So kind of an example of what you're describing, right?
Yes. Yes.
So as I want to talk more about this anti-Zion thing for just a second. But before we do, I want you to think about, and I'm just going to plant it. I want us to think about any time we are teaching, we are working to create a mini Zion. Like our family teachings, part of why we teach is to build Zion within our homes, right? When we think about the classrooms that we're in, I think of that as being a Zion-esque opportunity. Like we're all trying to learn together. We're trying to become more unified in our hearts. We're working. And to go back to the point that you brought up a little bit earlier, like that everybody is not the same. We're doing it in a space where we have to work at it because people think differently, act mm-hmm. differently, mm-hmm. behave differently, right? So that's all inherent. We know that Zion itself takes effort. It takes work. I mean, look at, for example, let's open our scriptures again. So let's go to Doctrine and Covenants this time. Oh, I went to Study Helps again. Come on, Julie. The worst navigator today of my phone. Okay, Doctrine and Covenants, let's go to 58. And when you look at verses 3 and 4, mm-hmm. look, read that last little bit of verse 3 and the very first bit of verse 4.
And the glory which shall follow after much tribulation, for after much tribulation come the blessings.
Okay, so this is in the context of building Zion, right? Mm-hmm. This is section 58. So we know that Zion people are going to go through hard. Like that's just part of becoming a Zion person, is that it's not going to be this easy breezy cakewalk. We know it's going to be challenging. And I think that one of those challenges is relationships. Mm-hmm. Like that's a big one, right? For a lot of them. Yeah. It's something that they talk about at General Conference all the time. It's been a real focus for President Nelson in recent months, especially as he talks about being a peacemaker and alleviating contention. We literally, it's like you think about how there's a quote, I can't remember who it is, that talks about how we can, if Satan is going to be bound by the righteousness of the people in the millennium, why can't we bind him now with our righteousness? And I kind of feel like that's what we're talking about here. Like, if eventually we're going to live peaceably with other people, why can't we start practicing that right now so that it's not unnatural and uncomfortable when we actually are living a celestial law? Like, try and live a celestial law now. And I think that's part of, you know, the instructions from our prophets and apostles are helping us to do that. And with Zion, same thing is true. So then if you look in and down in some subsequent verses, like down at verse 20, I think part of what, so this is Doctrine and Covenants 58:20. And in the interest of time, we're not going to just read all the verses. Mm-hmm. I just want to quickly go through it. It's talking about not elevating ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let the man think he is ruler, but like, okay, so then it also talks about judging,
mm-hmm.
right? Not being a judgy person, basically. Going down to verse 22, it's talking about submission. You know, being subject to the powers that be until he reigns, whose right it is to reign. Speaking of Jesus Christ, go down to 27. Talks about being anxiously engaged. So as we go through this, we can kind of picture, you know, some of the characteristics of Zion, and those all feel really real to me. And the point that I started thinking about, so if our goal is to start building mini Zions now, the biggest thing that stuck out to me as an obstacle to doing that has to do with our hearts. It has to do with our minds. We talk about being of one heart and one mind. If you were to analyze in the Kevin Jones brain and heart, the areas where you are still deficient when it comes to living in a Zion society, not the other people's hearts, nothing to do with that. Like, in order to be amongst the pure in heart, you have to first purify your heart. So I want you to think about that for a second. And this, it's kind of a yucky thought.
That's messy.
Unfortunately, like, it's messy, but every other individual that's working to do the same thing is going to be messy too.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to take for just a second and talk about what some of that messy looks like in our mini Zions. So these are our classrooms. Like, if we're a Sunday school teacher over the 16 and 17 year olds, it's those over whom we have stewardship to teach. If we are a seminary teacher, it's your mini Zion at 6 a.m. If you have early morning seminary, you're lucky if you don't. So think about these little mini Zion pockets, okay? And if your goal is to do that, you can go in with all the joy and optimism in the world, and you have to anticipate messy.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to go into one of the messes for just a minute.
Okay.
And I want us to think about the anti-Zion that you described a little bit earlier. So if you were to give a label to what is the opposite of Zion scripturally, what do you think of?
The great and spacious building.
Excellent. Let's go there. Okay. So if who would Zion be then in that? Who's
people
Zion
holding
in
on
that
to the analogy? Iron rod and approaching the tree of life.
Well, how appropriate, because think about it. What is the iron rod representative of?
The word of God,
right?
Right.
So what are we studying in our classrooms? When we're talking about being teachers, we are talking about teaching the word of God specifically. So what we're trying to do is create this collective group of people that are holding on to the iron rod, as the analogy wouldn't take it, right? So let's think a little bit about if those are our classrooms and there are people walking along the rod and they're clinging to the rod, what do you think their conversations look like? What are they talking about? How are they interacting with each other? Like, just kind of imagine up for a second a Zion class of people clinging to the word of God. What are some of the things that you picture if you start to add this layer to the dream, to Lehi's dream?
And we're in a, let's say, the 16, 17-year-old classroom of Sunday school or
wherever you are. Like, picture what that looks like. What are some of the characteristics of those conversations?
So here's my dream of that, where everybody has their scriptures out, and they're in it. They're like, wow, I've never thought of that before. That's wow, that's cool. Oh, that would be hard. How can we apply that? Wow. And then have some real heartfelt discussions around that, and then leave with, okay, what are we going to do about this to make our hearts more in tune with Zion? And we're all in together as a group. There.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And let me add just a little bit of color to that as well.
Because I'm colorblind. So I appreciate it.
Yes, sure. Because you're colorblind, I'm going to add color right now.
Okay.
So if you think about what those, when they're saying, wow, do you think that they're using cliche phrases and talking about it at a surface level and all of that?
You can't.
Like, they're talking about their real issues. Mm-hmm. They're vulnerable and sharing with each other because it's safe. Right?
Right.
They're giving and receiving, so to speak, without judgment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, there is a give and take.
Yes.
They don't feel judged. But in the minds of the people that are hearing other people's hard, they're not even judging in their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
So not only are they invested emotionally and engaged with that person, but they're not even having those judgmental thoughts in their brains because they are working towards the same thing. And they're like, let me help lift you. Oh, did you twist your ankle? Gosh, you know what? I got a shoulder here, man. Let me just kind of like help you for just a minute. Like, there is some real power, and they're all, you know, figuratively moving in the same direction. There's not Joe over there sitting in the corner that everybody chooses to ignore because he's grumpy today.
Right.
Right. Everybody's coming along on this journey as well in that Zion class. All right. Anything you want to add to the Zion class as we talked about it just now?
Yes. This reminds me, and I'm being very hesitant, and I'm trying to do this in such a way that it is appropriate for what it is. But this reminds me of a circumstance where there was someone where a class was going to be taught. The person found out what kind or how the class was going to be taught and tapped out and said, nah, I don't like that. I'm going home.
Oh, okay.
And when I heard about this, my thought was, what is the purpose of the class?
Yeah.
Why are you here? Yeah, you're here to learn, but you don't like to learn in that way. So you're not going to be a support to others. I mean, really, that's what Zion is all about, right? I mean, it's not just about me learning. I go to learn, but you know what? Sometimes it's about, I'm there because I may be able to help someone, or I may have an insight or a thought and say something that really sparks for someone else. So it's not about me, it's about them. So I think Zion in that case is a lot of the people, let's say these mini classrooms of Zion, they're there for each other, right? It's not just all sucking it in and being sucking in the teaching and being selfish. I don't want to say selfish about the teaching, but more self-centered.
Yeah. It is landing so well with me what you're saying, because I feel like it's so natural for us to want to be comfortable. And maybe that person felt a little bit uncomfortable with the way that the class is going to be taught. And so we tapped out, right?
Yeah.
And that it's what you're saying is that in a Zion environment, you work through that.
Yeah.
In a Zion environment, like, you show up, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have to cater to you, and you don't tap out if it doesn't. I mean, this is kind of part of the message. I think we've talked about this once, but it's been a message in General Conference a couple of different times where it's like, you know, you go to church not just for yourself so that you can be fed, but you go there to participate and to build. I mean, this really is like a lift and build each other opportunity when we gather. And so that goes for our little mini Zion classrooms as well, right? That we show up. If we don't feel like showing up, we feel prompted, motivated, inspired, whatever the right word is, that has a positive connotation, because I was going to say compelled, but that's not the positive connotation, to be there because of what it is that we are creating together, right?
Right. And okay, I think that's right there, Julie. I think that's kind of the crux of the thing. We are creating this together.
Beautiful. Yes.
Right? Well, you said it. You're the one who said it. It is. It's still beautiful. But I mean, it is creating it together. I think that a lot of times we think, well, I'm going to go do this. Or again, it's more self-centered around either what am I going to get out or how am I going to go help? Well, maybe it's, no, how are we going to create this together? And I think that's a much more inclusive, much more, I don't want to say inclusive, I think is the wrong, it is correct, but it's not the wrong or the right way of looking at it. It's not that we want to be inclusive. Of course we do, but it's more of the comprehensive, and that's the wrong word too, but
the larger.
Synergistic.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
That works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay, so you're bringing something up that we're going to talk about anti-Zion. And I want to build into it, but one of the things that you just brought up has to do with the teacher thinking that they are the person that creates this. And what you're saying is that the teacher is not the person that will create this. And if we're going in with that mindset, that is not in and of itself Zion-esque.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So yeah, there's no one person. Remember the scripture? There's no one person that elevates themselves in Zion above others. You might have a responsibility. Like people have different jobs. Think about when they were coming to Zion, the Lord was intentionally calling people with different skill sets to come and actually build something that people could come to, because there was nothing on the Western frontier at that point. And so they had specific responsibilities because of their skill sets. And that is you as a teacher. You are not elevated. You have a responsibility to bring something, to prepare, to do all of that. But if you come in thinking that it is you that creates Zion, then that's not very Zion-esque.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I was in a Sunday school class in South Carolina a couple Sundays ago, and the teacher got up and said, "Hi, everyone. I'm new to this calling, brand new. This is my first time teaching. I've been in Young Women's for 5 years. And so now I'm here and I am not who you're used to. And you're going to have to be okay with that. And so I don't know how to teach adults like this. So we're just going to go in and start learning together." And I thought that was such a great way. We're just going to go learn together. We're on this journey together. I thought that was so neat of her to do it that way. Instead of going, coming up. Yeah, I know, me too. Rather than her coming in and saying, "All right, I'm going to teach you everything I know." No, let's learn this together. Let's build this together.
Or even coming in and being self-deprecating. Like, that wasn't self-deprecating. She's like, "This is me. I'm going to give you the best of me.
And we're going to create this together. Like, exactly.
Either extreme was like, that's so beautiful. I love that. What a great example. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about the messy for a minute. After that great example, let's talk about some ugly. So let's go into scriptures again.
Okay.
The opposite, the great and spacious building. Mm-hmm. I really have had the past couple of times that I've studied this, some really interesting insights related to the great and spacious building. It's kind of like fascinating, not in like a voyeuristic way but I'm not like, "Ooh, the great and spacious building intrigues me." No, I feel like there's a lot that we can learn from studying what is taught about the great and spacious building that can be cautionary and that can be kind of insightful, because I think every one of us likely teleports over there periodically.
and then teleports back to the iron rod. Yes.
Kevin, will you please read in chapter 8 of 1 Nephi, verses 26 and 27? And we're looking to understand the great and spacious building better.
And I also cast my eyes round about and beheld on the other side of the river of water, on the other side of the train tracks, a great and spacious building. And it stood as it were in the air high above the earth, and was filled with people, both old and young, both male and female. And their manner of dress was exceedingly fine. And they were in the attitude of mocking and pointing their fingers towards those who had come at and were partaking of the fruit.
Okay, so specifically tune in to what we learn about the hearts and minds of the people in the great and spacious building. Because we've been talking about Zion, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we learn about the hearts and minds?
So if we're talking about, if we bring up the term again, anti-Zion, they are the true definition of anti in that word, in that title of pointing and mocking against, rather than building with. They are in the attitude of tearing down, I would say.
Awesome. Now, that sounds dramatic, right? To say something is Zion or it's anti-Zion. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about for just a second, what does it look like if you're moving in that direction or teleporting to the great and spacious building? Dummy it down, like, or mellow it out, I guess. So it's not anti, pointing, mocking, bleh. Like, let's make it relatable. Like, what are some anti-Zion things that we do that actually fit into that category? Like you and me.
Let's see. Maybe not standing up for.
Okay.
When we have the ability to stand up more for the church, and we just kind of let someone, you know, someone who may mock or someone who may say something off, we just kind of let it go or,
okay.
Right. Okay. So, okay. That's one thing.
Okay.
Help me out here.
Okay, I'm going to lead you just a teensy bit.
Yes, please
for
do.
For just a second. So I started, because some of these questions are kind of a little bit difficult to phrase. And so I don't even know if I'm asking them super well. I'm processing a little bit as we go. Like I said, sure. This is kind of a half-baked thing and I'm really kind of trying to muddy through it. But one of the things that I've thought about a little bit is, you know, I'm not pointing my fingers at somebody and mocking them. But if somebody makes a comment in class, I might go, that was stupid in my mind.
Right. Right? Yep. Yep.
Or this is even worse. Like I'm confessing horrible things here. Please don't. I really try not to do all of this, but I'm trying to relate to everybody else's brains too, by being honest about what sometimes floats through your head before you have the chance to stop it. Right.
Sure. Yes.
Or sometimes, for example, if I know somebody's history and I know they're struggling with a certain aspect of the gospel and they make a comment, I might say, wow, that felt biased or that felt judgy. And I run it through, like I'm filtering other people's comments and making a judgment about them and not always positive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So any other thoughts come to your mind when you think about the minds and hearts of them?
Yeah. When I see someone do something in the name of building up the church that I think, wow, that is actually not building up well, or Is it just different from what I would do? Right. And so I can get judgy on that and say, you know what? That was not the best way to do that. That could have been done so much better.
Yes.
But you didn't do it that way. Whatever. We'll have to endure you now. Right.
But you know, what you're saying makes so much sense. It's like, I know a little bit better. It's basically what you're saying in your mind.
Pretty much.
Like I could have done or whatever. Right. I also sometimes have thoughts in my mind about people who I feel like are extreme in their beliefs and or cheap or whatever. And so when they say something, I'm like, oh my gosh, talk real. Because I feel like they're talking cheesy talk or using a voice that feels cheesy. So judgments, right?
Right. Yes.
Like intending to mock right now.
I think that the judgment piece, what you said right there, judgments is really a lot of it. Because when someone is mocking and pointing and they're being true anti-Zion, they're full on in judgment mode. And then we, you know, try not to be judgy, but then we slip into a little bit of judginess. And
right.
I think a lot of it can be described by the judgment piece, the judgment right. phrase or title or characteristic. And
don't you think that those people who are engaging in that behavior progressed to that point? And it started with these thoughts, mm-hmm. right? They mm-hmm. didn't start with their fingers pointing aggressively. Mm-hmm. It started with these thoughts.
Sure.
Okay, so now think a little bit. Let's go over to chapter 11 for just a second.
Which is the explanation of...
You got eight. It.
Yeah.
10, 11. And then we're looking at 35 and 36 that are talking about the great and spacious building. And I just want to point a couple of specific things out, okay? As the angel of the Lord is describing to Nephi or explaining to Nephi the meaning of some of the things that were in his father's dream that's in chapter 8, one of the things that he says about the great and spacious building towards the end of 35, behold the world and the wisdom thereof. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, you know, is what's coming out of the great and spacious building actual wisdom? What he's saying mm-hmm. here is that it's the world and what they think they know, basically, right? Yeah.
They're supposed to
wisdom. So,
yeah.
Right. And I think a lot of us land there sometimes. Like we think we've got something figured out. And we are ready to tell the world about that.
Well, of course
so we do. So we're hanging out. I know. That's true. Of course. I mean,
right?
You do. You well, do for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean.
And then here... Behold, the house of Israel hath gathered together in the great and spacious building, and they are participating in things that are anti-Zion. They've gathered together to fight against the 12 apostles of the Lamb. So my rephrase, again, to take it from black and white extremes, because sometimes when we think about it as an extreme, we're like, I would never fight against the 12 apostles of the Lamb. This is house of Israel.
Right.
We belong.
Mm-hmm.
Who are gathered together with our friends, the people that we like, the people that think like us, the people that are cool, the people that are whatever. They're united in our way of thinking, be it a feminist cause or a political agenda or whatever that we feel maybe some righteous indignation about or whatever. We're gathered together to fight against or to just talk about, gossip about, you know, comment on things that are actually not building, but hurting this Zion that we're trying to create. Make sense?
Yeah. So my mind right there went to, what are we trying to do then? Because if we are in the attitude which we slip into of a judgment or whatever it might be like that, we are obviously not in the cause of building up Zion together. What are we in the attitude of? What is that attitude?
Yeah, I mean, let me answer that question from, because I'm giving this thought. Does that make sense? This is something that has been on my mind. I think a lot of it for me personally is to avoid discomfort, to make myself feel more comfortable, to self-justify or rationalize some of my own thoughts, some of my own kind of emotional and spiritual rubs, and to just try and make it all feel okay so that I don't have to sit in discomfort.
Mm.
Ironically, it's discomfort. How do you get rid of discomfort? With the comforter. When you are in the attitude of all of these things, you're not inviting the comforter. Part of why you have all of this is because of the lack of the spirit, the lack of the comforter. Do you see what I,
yes, is that? Yes. Yes.
Comment
makes yeah. sense? And you're just making it worse. You're stepping away, further away from the comforter, trying to feel more comfortable. And it's not working.
Exactly. Well, and I think but that's a very natural thing for us to do. Like there
right.
are times in every person's life we're facing the building. Mm-hmm. Right. And this is kind of what it is. We can even be, okay, let's look for, actually for a second, go to,
okay. I've got to say this. Go where, go where. I'll no, no. Tell me where we're going and I'll look at it while I say this.
8:28.
Okay.
What are you going to say?
So I just got this vision of holding on to the iron rod and hearing someone from the great and spacious building say about someone else and looking at him and go, actually, you're right. That was pretty funny. And then continue walking. Oh right? Yeah, you're not wrong. And keep going.
Guess what? Guess what's so funny about that, Kevin? Mm. What you just said. So think back to a podcast we just recorded about confidence.
Uh-huh.
And you, if you are confidently holding to the iron rod, you can hear that and laugh together about it. And it rolls right off.
Right.
Yeah, Zioness.
Yeah.
Right?
Good point.
That confidence. I love it. I just realized I'm being kind of aggressive with my face towards the camera a lot right now. I'm glad that not everybody, most people don't watch this.
This is Julie, like, up close excited. And personal.
I know. I'm like, oh, look at my pores. Oh, that was, I just keep going close. I don't mean to. I just get excited. Okay. So, but think about, okay, great and spacious building, right?
Yeah.
Look at what it says in verse 28 about the impact that it has the potential to have on people. Now, your mm-hmm. little comment about, yeah, he's not wrong, you know, confidently continuing to hold to the rod. Not everybody can do that. People who are struggling, people who are vulnerable, people who are like have some tender parts exposed right now might struggle a little bit more when they hear a comment or even feel a vibe that is great and spacious building-esque,
right,
coming in their direction
mm-hmm.
after they made a comment in class because your little judgy face
yep.
caught their eye, right?
Yep.
So verse 28. And so it's right here. People were ashamed. Like they tasted the fruit, but then they're like ashamed, not just because they're like, oh crud, I made a mistake. It's because of those that were scoffing at them. Mm-hmm. Like we, through our, what you think about unconsciously influences your behavior and your face. And so you have to, if this Zion mind and heart that we are talking about starts with us, we have to work on our face and on our mind. We can't let the thoughts, or they're not coming out of my mouth. That is not justification for the thoughts. And this is where I think most of us struggle. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
We all do, right? So we brought one up a little bit earlier. Like if you're the teacher, what is, and I don't want to call it because it's not anti-Zion. Like you're not
exactly
all the way over, right?
Right,
but
right.
You are facing the great and spacious building. One of the thoughts you brought up earlier is if the teacher comes in thinking, I got a lot to share and I'm going to create this primary characteristic, great and spacious building, pride. That's pride. And so I thought, even if the teacher comes in and they're like, okay, these 16, 17 year olds really never have anything constructive to say. So I'm not necessarily going to encourage comments because, or, you know, they, when, you know, this adult class that I'm teaching, you know, I feel like it's not as robust when we discuss it as a group. So I'm just going to give the meat myself. Like, mm-hmm. Even thinking that you talking is more valuable than engaging everyone else, that sounds like no foundation, pride hovering above great and spacious building characteristic.
Yeah, I like that.
And yet,
so I have to give you a little confession here, Julie.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So when I said, you're holding on to the iron rod, someone says, and they go, you're not wrong, right?
Oh, did I misunderstand that?
You did, in a good way. Thank you for misunderstanding me that way. What I really meant to say was that they made fun of someone else holding on to the iron rod, and we go, actually, you're right about to make fun of them for that, because you're right on for actually. But let's keep going.
Right. Teleported into this building.
But no, I had the vision. I had the vision of holding on to the iron rod going, actually, you're right. But all right, I'm just going to ignore the rest of that and keep going. And what you just said as a teacher, right? Going into the class and saying, these kids, man, they just don't get it. Whatever. I'm going to have to, whatever. All right. Now we're going to keep going, right? That's exactly what I was talking about by that comment.
I get you. Yeah. I kind of misinterpreted that one,
but
I was assuming best of motives.
Well, I appreciate that because I don't even have the best of motives all the time myself. So I appreciate you thinking that I actually had good motives.
I do. It's a very Zionesque of me.
That was, wow. Oh, see, not judgy. You displayed perfectly what you're trying to say. Julie, gold star, tink.
Except I got to stop or I get prideful and I teleport to the great spacious building. Oh my gosh, the dance is real. The dance is real. Okay, I want to wrap this up because I feel like I think that the point that I want to make, I'm hoping is going to be clear. So what I have felt is a lacking in my own mind and heart when it comes to creating Zion. Like I have really been examining, you know, what are the things that I do, for example, in the four walls of my home that are anti-Zion? Or what are the things that I do in a classroom that are anti-Zion? And I do it both as a teacher and as a learner. Every one of us does. And I don't believe that you can talk yourself into having different thoughts. You have to replace it, right? You can't like will the thought to disappear. So you have to replace it. And it's a conscious thing. And so part of what that requires is not self-deprecation. It doesn't require, you don't like humility. Like if you have pride, you don't like squish yourself to become more humble. That's not how it works. You just take yourself out of the equation and you start thinking more about other people. And so when you are considering how you're thinking about other people, that's where we might need to just put in a little bit more effort to focus more on what people have to contribute, what they have to add in Zion. If we are practicing living in Zion now, like you said at the very, very beginning, it's going to be messy. And we are among people that are different. And it's going to take some work that will be consistent, I think, as we live in Zion. We will consistently be growing and progressing and getting better at it. So let's start now. Let's practice now. So that's my thought.
Thank you. So some of my favorite discussions, Julie, are the ones that challenge my, I want to say assumptions, but they're not even conscious assumptions. They're just kind of how we live, right? The water and fish, right? The water's around them. They just assume that, you know, that's the way life is. Yeah. Right? And I think this is one of those for me that we do what we do and we go about doing it. But thinking about Zion, let's make Zion now and in our little mini groups. And how am I kind of being anti-Zion-esque or great and spacious building-esque? It's kind of a wake up. That's good. Yeah. I can see why you've been thinking about this a lot.
Yeah, I've definitely been ruminating on it. And it's a little bit of, you know, the thing that it's empowering. Like it's not just painful, right?
Sure.
Sometimes you're like, oh darn. But it's actually really empowering as well when you start to notice some of those things. And I just have realized how deficient I am in building some of those characteristics. So great. I have something to work on and that's empowering. And so part of it, I know that sounds a little bit ridiculous, but when you are floating, it doesn't actually feel that great. Like you want to feel the pain of progress a little bit is very invigorating. It's very positive. And so I do feel like this to me is it's a conscious effort, but it's very gratifying when I feel myself starting to be even just a little bit better. Like when I'm thinking about this and I have the thought, okay, I'm trying to build Zion. Last night, our gospel study, which usually is awful, and my kids were sprawled and like halfway vertical for part of it and stuff like that, we decided to pivot and do something completely different. And I'm like, oh, but now we're not going to get through. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. What's the most Zion-esque thing? We're all working to build together. And we ended up doing something that was not related to the scriptures. It was listening to a homecoming talk of a friend that was so uplifting. And because my kids love him, they were so engaged and we had a fantastic discussion about it. But I had to do my anti-Zion tendency to, you know, think, oh, I'm the one that's holding my family accountable. I've got to create this. That's so great. I think it's helpful. It's been helping me.
Well, I think it'll be helping me now too. Thank you. And for those of you who it may have helped, if you would share this, help others create Zion. And again, like you said, we create this together. This is an us thing, but we have to, it has to start in our hearts.
Start with us.
Yes. Thank you, Julie. We'll see you all next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.